Hello, I'm Steve Wiggins, and this is podcast number 11 of the Sects and Violence in the Ancient World blog. Today's topic is going to be fundamentalism. One of the burdens of monotheism is the concern for an absolute truth. This stands to reason. If there is only one God, and if that God is consistent, then the truth must be a unity. The problem with this is that people see things in different ways. People naturally disagree with each other, and so how can one person or any one group of people have the truth? Even within groups of people that have like-minded approaches to issues, there are differing opinions. This becomes very apparent when we start to look at fundamentalism. Fundamentalism is often considered to be the default form of Christianity. As a matter of fact, it has now, in many places, co-opted the title Christian to apply solely to itself. I can't even count the number of times that people have approached me and asked me if I was a Christian, meaning, of course, a fundamentalist variety of Christian, not a Roman Catholic or a Protestant or any other garden variety Christian. It's not good enough because you have to be one of them. Now, this is an interesting phenomenon because today many people treat the word Christian as if it refers to fundamentalists. And I'm not talking just about fundamentalists themselves. A lot of times I have students in my classes that come from a variety of religious backgrounds, and they will ask about the Christian viewpoint. And if you can read the subtext of their comments, it's quite clear they mean, what do fundamentalists think about this? As with creationists, fundamentalists also have a history. And also, like creationists, the history is not as ancient as we would be led to believe. To find the origins of fundamentalism, we have to go back to the early decades of the 20th century. Historically, we can probably point to the first decade of the 20th century as being when the whole idea started to get on a roll. The gay 90s were over, and Darwin was winning wide acceptance in Christianity. As I mentioned in my post about the creationist movement, there are strong indications that Christianity had very few problems with Darwinism once it came to accept the idea. But also at the same time, there were new doubts being cast on the Bible by higher criticism in Germany. Scholars at this time were beginning to question the veracity of the text as it stands, realizing, maybe for the first time historically, that we don't have the original of the biblical text, and so we have to reconstruct. And as soon as you start to reconstruct, then you start to get issues of whether or not you can really trust the text. So this kind of doubt about the Bible, combined with the seeming dominance of the Darwinian theory, caused many people to be afraid. Not only that, but technology was beginning to burgeon at this point in time, and so we had people beginning to realize that this can-do attitude among human beings put God severely at risk, or at least in some people's minds. And then, in the midst of all this, the First World War came. I have long told students that I believe that if you are looking for a defining characteristic for modern America, or a defining event for modern America, you have to look back to the First World War. That generation is largely dying off now, people who've lived through the First World War, but clearly things were very different when that war ended. It changed everything. I think that things that were taken for granted, certainties before the war, were no longer so certain afterwards. And there are a number of reasons for this. I'm not a sociologist, but I do have some idea that we get a sense of disenchantment taking place after the war. So much had been lost for so little gain. And not only that, but it was an extremely cruel war, and people saw the cruelty that was being used. Indeed, a cruelty that was in the Christian tradition among Christians. Both sides in the war claimed Christian origins. This was a kind of violence against fellow Christians that really even came to a level higher than that of Imperial Rome. People devising new ways, new and nasty ways to kill each other, and for what? So we get a sense that after this war, there was a real fear present in our culture, not only in the United States, but also in Europe, And people were not sure quite what to deal, quite how to deal with this new fear. One response was to reject modernity, to reject the modern movement, because it seemed that all of these problems could trace their origins to modern ideas that were infiltrating that good old time religion. Now, this was a new idea. Keep in mind that prior to this, established Christianity in a variety of forms was already widespread throughout Europe and much of the world, and that most of these people did not have a concern with what we would later call fundamentalism. This is probably really best illustrated by William Jennings Bryan, who is probably most famous for his role in the Scopes Monkey Trial, but had a long political career before that, and even managed to influence a lot of social change for the good of all people in the country. But even in his own recollections of his concerns about this, Jennings Bryan talked about the atrocities. He repeatedly cited the atrocities of the First World War as one of his reasons for wanting to reject modern developments. He saw what could be done by people to other people, and it really frightened him. So this idea of fear ties in very closely with what drives religion, not just in modern times, but also, as I've said in other posts on this blog, in ancient times as well. Fear is a great motivating factor for religion. The Niagara Bible Conference took place between the years 1878 and 1897, and this was a group of Protestants who met together in an attempt to define what the fundamentals of Christianity were from a Protestant point of view. This was a redefining of Christianity, making it in Protestantism's image. At this point in time, Catholicism was viewed as suspect, and in many people's points of view at this time in America, it was a very definitely a Protestant-oriented country. Europeans, those who were over there, tended to be Catholics, and we saw what that got us into. So people were very afraid of the Catholic outlook and considered the only true form of religion to be Protestantism, and its stronghold, of course, was America. And so these people met together to redefine Christianity in Protestantism's image. This was considered to be a very basic question. What is Christianity? What is non-negotiable? What is it that we can say must be present for someone to be known as a Christian? Now, if modern ideas were to be believed, then the Bible itself could not be trusted as a historical document. There are many reasons for this. One of them is that in the 1870s, archaeologists had begun to discover other ancient documents that put the Bible into a context that it lacked before. So now we have people believing or knowing that there were stories of the flood and of the creation of the world that definitely influenced ideas that appear in the book of Genesis, but which predate the book of Genesis by centuries. And this was a disturbing thought, because if the Bible is God's revealed word, then how do you have pagans, polytheistic pagans, coming up with the stories that later appear in the Bible? It just doesn't add up. The only option available is to reject it, to reject modern scholarship, to reject modern thoughts about this. Because if you look at the facts as they stand, and the facts as they still stand today, then you simply can't accept the historical record of what fundamentalism teaches is the origin of Christianity. One way to think about this is that when looking for a source of certainty, they found it in the Bible. The Bible was unchanging from their way of thinking. There's a distinct preference for the King James Version among most fundamentalists. The reason for this is not so much the beauty of the language in the translation, nor is it certainly its accuracy, because the King James Version is full of problems from a translator's point of view. But it's because that once you fix the text, then there's something unchanging that you can refer back to. Any new translation is a problem because then it casts doubt on the original text. And the sad fact of the matter is we don't have the original of any of the biblical texts. All we have are copies and translations and copies of translations and translations of copies. We don't have original texts. And this lack of certainty could be met in some measure by saying there is one Bible we all agree to. The King James Version should be it. And that preference is still there among some fundamentalist groups. The movement got its real spearhead with a publication. It was actually a set of 12 books called The Fundamentals, and it largely grew out of the Niagara Conference's discussions. This was founded by Lyman Stewart and his brother. Lyman Stewart was one of the co-founders of Union Oil, now a part of Chevron. And he and his brother founded, Lyman Stewart and his brother founded the, or funded, I should say, the publication of the Fundamentals, this set of 12 books, to redefine Christianity. And as they did so, they would, in fact, be preserving what they thought was ancient Christianity. Now, again, the study of ancient Christianity has continued apace since this time, and we know that these assumptions themselves were mistaken. But nevertheless, they came up with five basic ideas that were considered absolutely fundamental to being Christian in their understanding. The first, of course, refers to the Bible. It is the inspiration of the Bible and its concurrent idea of inerrancy. This idea is so problematic and on so many levels, inerrancy especially, that it will take another podcast to even try to sort that out. But that was their first tenet. You have to fix the basis. The Bible has to be the sole basis. The second concern was the historicity of the virgin birth. The third was that Christ had to have died in a way that caused atonement or made atonement available for humanity. So atonement theology, if you will. The fourth major tenet was a physical resurrection, and the fifth one was a belief in miracles. Now, if you stop and look at this, three of the five of these tenets of basic Christianity involve the supernatural involvement of God in the world in the form of miraculous occurrences. There is a real concern that in a world where God could be doubted because of the inhumanity of what was going on in the First World War and industrialization, which treated people as if they were simply cogs in a machine, that there must be some way of reasserting that miracles did happen. And looking back to a historic era for which we have no living witnesses and saying there were indeed miracles at that time, and therefore these are fundamental to what Christianity is, was actually a new idea. So God did not act when expected to act after the First World War, during the First World War, or even yet on into the Second World War. The more that happened in the worldwide picture, and the more that news traveled quickly so that people could find out these atrocities, liberation from the death camps and other things like that, really had a major impact on people's perceptions of the way the world worked. The more these ideas were out there, the more disturbing they became, and people became quite afraid that somehow God had slipped out of the picture. How do you say that there's a God active in the world when millions of innocent people die just simply for maintaining their traditional religion? It just doesn't make sense. And so people tried to force the issue by declaring the fundamentals and saying, you're with us or against us, drawing a line in the sand. And from that day, it has become such a prevalent idea that, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, many people have a very difficult time disassociating Christianity from fundamentalism. They are seen to be one and the same. But in actual fact, it is a historical movement that begins only in the early stages of the last century, and in the course of just 100 years had established itself, in American minds anyway, as the only true form of Christianity. Well, I'm sure that there are many Catholics and mainstream Protestants and other folks out there who would beg to differ with this. But unless we can learn to use the media in a way that is effective so that the voices of the mainstream can be heard amidst all the noise that is generated by fundamentalist movements, until that can happen, fundamentalism has become and will continue to be the default version of Christianity.